Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
To understand, the French don't know the American judicial system. They don't know that cameras are allowed in the court. They don't know this tradition in New York City, at least, of the perp walk. In France, it's, for example, it's forbidden to show somebody with handcuffs that has not been convicted. So on these many levels, they are discovering what it is here in the U.S. To be treated as a criminal.
We are going to discuss the perp walk today on the Savage Nation. And at this point, we all have an opinion about this incident. A rich banker allegedly rapes poor black Muslim maid. It soon will become an international racial issue. Trust me on that one. However, he is still innocent until proven guilty, according to the judicial system of the United States of America. Nevertheless, he has already been convicted. Both by the way he was handled, which is the same way a poor person would be handled, which I think is the correct way to handle things. I personally don't like to see men who are arrested on the highway for minor crimes have their face jammed into the pavement, but that's the American judicial system that has emerged, and that's the world that we live in. In order to show that we're not racist, they treat an American guy, let's say pulled over for speeding, if he should say one word to a cop, he has as much chance to be treated in this manner as an MS-13 gangbanger. Probably an MS-13 gangbanger would be treated better than a white man who was caught speeding and opened up his mouth to a cop. Nevertheless, what do you think? Did this guy rape her, or do you think he was set up? Now you say, why are you wasting your time talking about it? All right, then I won't talk about it. Here's another story for you. Nearly 20% of new Obamacare waivers are gourmet restaurants, nightclubs, fancy hotels in Nancy Pelosi's district. Let me repeat that. Of the 204 Obamacare waivers, the new ones, the administration of this creature administration of ours, this third world administration, they just gave 204 new waivers to eateries, nightclubs, and decadent hotels in House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi's Northern California District. To me, this is as corrupt as any South American banana republic. But I'm not shocked with Nancy Pelosi. We've known that she is what she is. We know that she is what she is. The question is, how does she get away with it? How does she get away with granting Obamacare waivers like this? How? How is it that the Republicans let her get away with this? I can list the restaurants. I'm not going to do it. How can any liberal listening to this show not see the corruption of Nancy Pelosi and the entire the Obamacrat party? How is it possible that you don't see that we have become a cheap third world nation under Obama, that he's just like a third world dictator? His administration is no different than a cheap administration somewhere in South America, in so many ways, though. Or would you rather talk about the French being shocked by the IMF chief's perp walk? The perp walk has no French counterpart. In fact, the French treat all criminals with more dignity. And I agree that the French, if you're going to treat anyone with dignity, you should treat all with dignity, incidentally. By the way, I don't think there should be a perp walk. We try to investigate where the perp walk started. It goes back to Rudy Giuliani. That's right. The best investigation that we could conclude from our investigation, which was a cursory investigation, it was not exhaustive in any manner. The perp walk goes back to Rudy Giuliani, who was trying to make a name for himself as a crime-busting prosecutor. Now, we understand the rich and powerful are equal to the rest of the rubes out there, and you say, well, that's good. But I actually think it's wrong. I think that the perp walk is an attempt to shame someone who is not known to be guilty of crime. And in that sense, the French critique of the U.S. justice system is correct. Okay? Now, on the other hand, the idea that this guy should be given special treatment is not correct. I believe that the socialist rapist, or the alleged socialist rapist, or the rich socialist alleged rapist, or the alleged rapist who was a socialist and rich, is a big story. However, I don't think that the way he is treated is any different than anybody else, which brings us to the whole issue of how are Americans treated when they're accused of a crime. I believe that the perp walk is inappropriate in a society where people are supposedly presumed innocent. It is a circus that is created strictly for the media and the prosecution. He's finished. He's not guilty. He's not innocent. He's finished in either case. Now, who else is at the International Monetary Fund is the real question. In a way, this is very good news for us because we were being screwed by this Frenchie, the sex poodle. But there are others that you have to look at the IMF. John Lipsky is on the IMF. Who is he? Well, in 1998, he worked for J.P. Morgan. And then he went to the IMF. And then he went back to J.P. Morgan. How about Olivier Jean Blanchard, chief economist at the IMF? Why is it important? Because he was an advisor for the Federal Reserve Banks of Boston and New York. How about Caroline Atkinson? Who are these silent manipulators of our lives? She's director of external relations at the International Monetary Fund. She's held high-level positions at the Council on Foreign Relations, the Stonebridge International Foundation. And that, of course, is run by Madeleine Albright and that firm from Washington, D.C. Also on the IMF is Leslie Lipschitz, guest scholar at the Brookings Institute, which is a far-left, a radical far-left think tank. So the entire IMF is just filthy with socialist wealth reorganizers, meaning they want to take from your pocket and give to themselves and their cronies under the guise of helping the poor. Nearly 20% of new Obamacare waivers are gourmet restaurants, nightclubs, fancy hotels in Nancy Pelosi's district. How is this possible? How does she get away with it? 1-800-449-8255. Do you want to talk about the perp walk? Do you want to talk about the fact that he's presumed innocent until he's guilty? Who do you think Mr. Whatever his name is, Dominic DSK looks like, Dominique Strauss-Kahn looks like? I thought he was he had a good resemblance to Madoff. I thought he looked like Madoff's fraternal twin, but someone just emailed me from an airplane and said, no, Michael, he looks like Norman Mailer in his later years. So, I mean, that's neither here nor there. Just come out that the maid was a Muslim. This is going to get much bigger. Dominique Strauss-Kahn, the maid, was named by the French media. She was a devout Muslim. She's a 32-year-old Ghanaian immigrant. She is married and has a 15-year-old daughter. Her 43-year-old brother reads a script saying she's a wonderful, hardworking woman who loved her job. I don't believe a word that anything is coming out now about any of them, neither about him nor other. So the fact of the matter is, once it comes out now around the world that the man who raped her was a rich banker, a white rich banker, and that she was a poor black Muslim, wait until you see what goes on now in the third world. Neighbors said she was a devout Muslim who wore a headscarf and worked long hours at the Sofitel Hotel. Those are her neighbors on the red brick apartment block in the Bronx where she lived. I grew up in a red brick apartment block where nobody ever wore a headscarf, so far as I know, but it's a different world today. Does it matter? You betcha. There's nothing we could say about Schwarzenegger and his alleged love child. I am not surprised by anything that comes out about Schwarzenegger. I believe this explains, however, why the governorship of Arnold Schwarzenegger was run by Maria Shriver.
Savage.
Well, the Obama Navy has just launched a new ship. They're naming it for the communist organizer, Cesar Chavez, if you can believe it. That's right. This is all under Obama. The Navy has named a new ship for Cesar Chavez, the community organizer. I don't know what to say about it other than what I just said about it. Ron Paul is making no sense. He's saying sell the gold in Fort Knox. He's 100% wrong. In fact, it shows that he has no concept of economics. Why would you sell gold in Fort Knox? Why don't you just get rid of the oil in the National Reserve of Oil, the Petroleum Reserve? It's crazy. Why don't you just sell the Empire State Building? Why don't you just outsource the Defense Department, Ron? You could balance the budget that way. Why don't you let the Chinese run the U.S. Defense Department? Nonsense. So Ron Paul has now told the New York Sun he thinks that the U.S. government should sell gold at Fort Knox. This shows a naivete that borders on the insanity, on the insane, by the way. Insane. The government holds 147 million ounces of bullion, which at the recent price of about $1,500 an ounce would be worth about $370 billion. So what, then we have no gold and we have absolutely nothing backing our currency? It's unbelievable to me. Not only that, it would destroy the value of gold worldwide to do that, to dump gold like that. Why is it that Ron Paul would say sell our gold from Fort Knox while China is going out and looking to buy tons of gold? This is just nuts. Why don't you just sell off Mount Rushmore? Or further, Ron Paul, why don't you just offer spots on Mount Rushmore for anyone who wants to pay, let us say, $100 million? You get your portrait cut into the mountains of Mount Rushmore. I mean, doesn't it stop anywhere? Okay, you don't want to talk about that. That's okay. Indiana Gary, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, being on your program the past few times, I've made many predictions. I wanted to stand correct on a few of them. On January 11th, big mudslides happened in Brazil. On 2/11, Mubarak stepped down in Egypt, caused a ruckus at the Middle East crisis that spread from Bahrain to Libya. On 3/11, happened in Japan. Everyone knows the downfall of that. On 4/11, the French and the UN got themselves mixed up in the Ivory Coast and took a president, basically took him out and put an IMF puppet in his place. And on 5/11, we had a couple earthquakes in Spain that basically caused a lot of damage. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is you're talking about the IMF banker who got basically sold down the river, correct?
Well, either he raped her or didn't, but it happened on what date?
It happened on the 14th. But here's the interesting part. I always talked about big events happen on the 11th and the 29th because the powers that be always want to use the most emotional energy possible to exploit something.
All right, let's cut to the chase. So what does this connect? It didn't happen on May 11th, so where's the numerology connection?
He's going to court on 5/20/2011. Let's do the math together. 5/20/211 adds up to 111. You see my point? You're talking about the Muslim.
Well, I mean, the way you do numerology is very intriguing, but I don't necessarily buy it. What is your basic allegation here? What are you suspecting?
My suspicions are this in this certain matter. I believe he was set up to basically get people riled up. Let me explain what I mean by that. I told you the court date is going to be on an 11 day. You said this guy basically looks like Bernie Madoff. So that got me to thinking. I started talking about Bernie Madoff a while.
Well, let's not go on and on about it. I mean, let's stick to the facts. We don't know whether he's innocent or guilty. We know that the woman, now it turns out, is that she's a devout Muslim. That starts to change the picture slightly, doesn't it?
Of course, and the fact that they're exploiting this on the 11th. Remember, the Iranian Revolution happened on 2/11. They're always doing it on 11 days. The reason I brought up Bernie Madoff was he was arrested on the 11th. He pleaded guilty to 11 federal felonies. He was sentenced to jail on the 29th. 2 + 9 = 11. There's a pattern.
All right, so, okay, let's cut to the chase again. What are you saying? Give me a prediction in 30 seconds or less.
My prediction is this. This guy will fry for this.
He will fry.
In the court of public opinion, he is done. He will.
No, he's done in the court of public opinion. But what if his lawyer pleads consensual sex for money and that the woman then turned it on him or she was robbing something? And, you know, just because she wears a headscarf doesn't mean she's holy.
Oh, no, of course not. But, you know what that means. In Kabul, they will riot. And Iran.
Yes, absolutely. The minute it comes out that she's a Muslim, there's going to be riots in Pakistan and in Afghanistan and in Libya and in Morocco and in Egypt. It's going to rock the world when it comes out that she is a Muslim. There's no question about it.
And Dr. Savage, since we're speaking about Pakistan, I want you to follow up on one thing. Please do this. the Chinese and the Pakistanis signed a deal to build roads between those two nations. The Chinese have 200 million man army. They had no way to get them into the Middle East. They will now through Pakistan, our supposed friends.
Very worrisome. Very worrisome indeed. I'm more concerned with what I'm going to have for dinner. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. No, no, really. At the end of the day, what are you going to do about? I'm now going to worry about China building roads through Pakistan. How much can I worry about? I mean, in that sense, I'm no different than the people in the audience. How much can you sit and walk and around in your head? Now I'm going to worry about roads through Pakistan and Chinese armies coming down into the Middle East. I mean, what should I worry about next? Well, I'll tell you what I should worry about next. What Chavez is doing in our own backyard. In our South American backyard, Chavez is allegedly building missile launching sites. And as far as I am concerned, I'm more concerned about that than I am about the Chinese food for dinner, than I am about that. But the fact is that if we had a viable government and a viable military, they'd blow up the launching pads right now before Chavez goes to the next step, as they should have done with North Korea. But I don't think that's ever going to happen. Okay? So we got a lot to talk about. Gold, Ron Paul, waivers from Pelosi in her backyard, Schwarzenegger and his love child. Did the Frenchman do it or didn't he do it? Is she a liar or a victim? These are important questions in some way and quite boring in another. If you'd rather talk about, advice column, I think I'd almost rather become, you want some advice? Can I do advice? Maybe I'd have more fun doing that. What do we call the advice thing, Bay? Well, if we have a thing to go, do we have the music to go with the life coach music? Why don't you find a life coach music? We'll throw that and we'll take mixed in life coach questions. In the sense that I'm sort of an uncle figure to many of my listeners and they don't have any father figure in their family. They have nobody they can ask who has much education and they trust me. What am I hearing? That's a Finato? That's my life coach? No, Desafinado was when I was 18 years old and made, I don't know what it was.
Savage.
Hi, this is Dr. Savage, your lifestyle coach here. We're going to shift away from politics for the moment and go to what's really important, and that's the personal. If you have a personal question, a lifestyle question, a life coach question that I can help you with, just give us a call at 1-800-449-8255. Remember, people are paying $500 an hour and more for this kind of advice. So if you're lucky enough to get through the call screener and get onto the Savage Nation, you're going to earn some of the best advice you've ever heard right here on the Dr. Savage Lifestyle segment. I'm not even in the mood to do this. I mean, we played the thing. I'm in a strange mood. Who knows? I don't know what it is. Maybe the weather, this, and I don't know what. Do you want me to be a lifestyle coach now? Do you want me to talk about the perp or the perv or the victim, the this, the that? What is the day of the week already? What day is this today? This is normally, it's Tuesday. Normally this was Chicken Curry Tuesday, but I stopped eating in that restaurant because the portions got smaller, the shrimp got smellier. And the smiles got larger. So that was a... Everywhere I go, it's the same thing. Even the fishmonger that I go to, the fish was no good yesterday. I had the worst cooking experience of... Do you want to hear this or not? I normally like to... I go into... No one's interested in the next man's problems. I cooked a fish at home last night. I didn't even like... And I smelled the fish like my aunt taught me in the fish store. I learned 40 years ago when she'd go in the butcher shop and look at the meat. Because she didn't trust him then. Believe me, she you know, the butcher knew her, but he cheated her anyway. She went into a freezer in August in a fur coat to make sure he wasn't giving a bad meat. So I learned then and there not to trust the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker. And so now I buy a piece of fish and I smell it in the store. I knew it was not fresh. I knew it wasn't sour. I wouldn't have bought it. So he said, fresh today. I said, yeah, all right, it's 2 days old. Because I know fishermen, they tell you the freshest fish is 2 days old. That's number two. Unless you're buying it off the boat, and even there it's 2 days old. How old do you think fish is on a boat? So already it's 4 days old. This smelled already probably like Gendelman's underwear, like 5 days. I don't know, whatever. I tried a new recipe. I tried oven baked. It was horrible. I'm not an oven baker. You know why I don't like using an oven for cooking? You want to hear why? It's not fast enough. You see, it's interesting about cooking. I may do a cooking show, and leave politics behind, because I'll tell you the truth, there's all, you can see the whole world in a saute pan. Why do I like a sauteed meal better? Because it's faster. Okay, cooks in front of you. An oven, you're looking in every 2 minutes through the glass. Every 2 minutes looking, is it cooking, is it not cooking? Is it boiling, is it not boiling? Do I think it's cooking? How do you know if it's cooked through an oven? Who has the time to sit and wait? It's from another era, an oven. It's when you had nothing to do but drink wine and look in a hot oven. I can make fish in 4 minutes. The guy taught me how to do it. 3 minutes on one side, flip it, 2 minutes on the other. It's over. It's crispy. It's golden. That's the end of the fish. It took me 30 years to learn how to saute a fish properly. And I'm more excited about talking about how to cook a fish than I am about the Frenchman who was allegedly whatever he did. But I'm going to take some life coach questions now. Let's go to Florida. Bob, you're on the Savage Nation. Bob, what's on your mind?
Savage, I love trickle-up poverty. Okay, I got this issue. I'm 30 years old. I've been doing my job for 5 years, and I don't make much money. I can't seem to move up in a position. I have a master's degree. I have 5 years experience, yet everybody in this position above me gets hired on by my Hispanic female boss. And they don't even have so much as a bachelor's degree. Well, I have a master's. They don't have any experience.
All right, hold on. So there's discrimination going on in your company is what you're hinting at. Is that correct?
I don't know if it is, because some white people do move up, but you're usually a minority. Some Jewish people move up, sometimes people that have different situations. So I don't know if it's outright racist.
Well, let's stop for a minute. Do they have better educations or equal educations to you? And let's start with the basics. The people who are moving ahead of you, do they have equal or better experience and equal or better education?
No.
Okay, hold on. Do they perform better somehow at the job itself? Is it a business related to sales?
No, it isn't. But 90% of my employees I work with love my job. They respect me. They say I do a great job. So I know.
So let me ask you, make believe I'm an arbitrator. What are the parameters that are being used to judge whether an individual should be promoted?
I would say whether or not they can do their job punctually and ethically and do it sufficiently.
All right, so you allege that you're doing it more punctually and more ethically than those being promoted above you?
Absolutely, especially ethically, and just with knowledge overall. I've been there 5 years. They're hiring people outside of the area that have no experience and nowhere near my education.
Okay, hold on now. Are they paying them more?
Yes.
Okay, so this could be an employment discrimination case. It might be difficult to prove for the reason that you can't give me a very strict example of the parameters that are being used for hiring and promotion. I don't know what they are.
Basically, as long as you can do the job, and it's really about it, to be honest with you.
I'll tell you what I would do if I were in your place. If you got into a dead-end situation where you felt you were being picked on because you're a white guy and they're using racial minorities to push them ahead of you, let's say you just feel it but you can't prove it, it's time for you to move on. They're doing you a favor. Whether you know it or not, what they're saying to you is, if you can do better, go ahead and do it. And you know what? Often this is the kick in the behind we need to move on in life. Let's say you got that little promotion. You might be stuck there another 5 years. Whereas on the other hand, what if you can go out in your own time, legitimately find a better job where you could say, I'm better than everybody at work, and I want to move up to a more responsible position because I'm ready for it, and make 20% more money than you would there. Wouldn't you say that would be an opportunity that you'd want?
I would. And you know, Savage, I've saved my money. I have 20 grand in the bank. I have no family. I'm single, you know. And I got no dependents, and I'm in a perfect position. I'm just afraid to take that leap, and I don't know if I should.
Well, hold on now. Wait a minute. Is it permissible for you to look for another job while working here?
Yes.
I don't mean on their time. On your own time, are you allowed to send out, go on the internet, et cetera?
Oh, absolutely.
All right, so why don't you do that and then decide? You don't have to decide now. Let me give everybody listening to this show a very important piece of advice that I learned when I went into radio, and I wasn't sure I was going to go into radio. I was a fairly successful corporate consultant at the time. I was making a reasonable living, enough to live on, taking care of the family. But I wanted something more in my life. What I did was I sent out the tape for radio to 400 and some odd stations. I mentioned this before. 5 to 7 stations said, you're great. Would you like to come work for the radio station? I didn't know what to do. I went and talked to a very brilliant old-time lawyer in Washington, D.C. He was one of the smartest men I ever met. And I said, I don't know what to do. Should I leave consulting and try radio? What if the radio doesn't pan out, then I lost my consulting jobs. He said, think of it as a horse race. Keep pushing all of the horses around the racetrack at the same time. He said, keep your consulting job. Take the radio job on a part-time basis until you find out if you're any good at it and if you really have a skill for it and if they want you. And keep moving the horses around, and then you find out which horse wins. So you're not exactly in the same position. But since you don't have to give up your job in order to look for another one, what's wrong in looking for another one right now?
The trouble is, I've been looking online, and it's a big wash. You know, there's no personality these days. You can't go up and meet someone. They say, oh, you got to apply online. We can't meet with you. And I've been doing it for 2 years since I had my master's. And I know
so are you afraid that if you don't look around, you're going to get stuck here in this position forever?
Yes.
Well, yeah. Go with your instincts. Obviously, you have survival instincts, so you wouldn't be where you are and get a master's degree. You're an ambitious young guy, and you want to move on. You have no choice here other than you can't take it up with your boss or supervisor?
I can. I have. The thing is, I called them out on some crap that they were trying to throw at me, and I made the boss look bad. I did it in a civilized way. But
well, you see, now here's the problem. The minute you did that, she's now going to pick on you forever. There's nothing you could do now. You've already, the die is cast. She now sees you as an enemy. There's nothing you could do now to overcome what you've already done. And you did the right thing, but you should have calculated in advance that once you went over our head, you made her into an... She's an opponent now.
Yeah.
All right, so I got to move on. I'm going to tell you, if you were my son and you're not, use your aggression and use your intelligence to get out of that place any way you can. Okay? 1-800-449-8255. Or if you want to talk about the political topics, fine. We can do that mixed in. You want to talk about Trump? You want to talk about Huck Finn? And you want to talk about Huck Finn and it's crazy, the whole thing. I would vote for Perry in a minute, by the way. They say that Perry, the governor of Texas, wants to jump in. I'd back him 1,000%. Two reasons. He's more conservative than Romney, number one. Number two, he made me an admiral in the Texas Navy. It's a plaque card. It's actually a plaque I proudly keep on my boat. Did you know that I'm an admiral in the Texas Navy? You're joking. Huh? I'm not joking. And it's signed by Rick Perry, so I'm definitely a backer of Rick Perry. I cannot say that Romney made me an admiral in the Massachusetts Navy, for example. Okay, New York, WOR, Mike, what's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Michael, is the
yes.
case of the Frenchman living by the sword and dying by the sword, and what I mean is he got his job after pushing Paul Wolfowitz, the deputy Secretary of Defense under Rumsfeld, out of the IMF in a case where Wolfowitz had his girlfriend working there, let the board of the IMF know, and when he was advocating for a raise for his girlfriend, they trumped up this thing like it was some kind of underhanded sexual dealing and ran him out. I don't know if he engineered this, but Wolfowitz must certainly be laughing and finding.
Well, okay. Look, you're not telling me anything I'm shocked by. In any corporation, as you just heard from the young man who called, there are politics at play. And the higher up you go in the corporate world, the more vicious the politics become. You know that, right?
Sure.
Okay, so what's the shocking news in that? The guy was a master, a chess player with people's lives, and now he got caught in his own game by one mistake he made through his own weakness. I think this is almost biblical, by the way, in its connotations. The ramifications of this story are not only literary, but they're also spiritual. This guy could be used as a talking point in a church or a synagogue this Saturday. In fact, if there were viable synagogues left in America, some rabbi would talk about this man and how his life was destroyed by his own disinclinations. That's what should be talked about instead of reading scripture from 5,000 years ago without any relevance to today. That's what I would do if I were a spiritual leader. I would tell the story about this man and what it means to you in that audience, in that synagogue, in that church, and how you could throw your whole life away with a few seconds of pleasure. After all, what was a guy looking for? 15 minutes of pleasure? 7 minutes of pleasure? 4 minutes of pleasure? How do we know? And for that, he threw his life away. Look at that. That's a biblical story, isn't it?
It is. Yeah,
of course it is. So Wolfowitz, I was never a fan of to begin with. So that's number two. Anyone who works at the IMF, I'm not a fan of. I don't even know why we have an IMF. An IMF is basically a slush fund for bankers to make sure they can rob from the middle class and give to themselves. Arkansas, Mary Lynn, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. It's an honor to talk to you.
Thank you.
From California. I lived in Vallejo to Arkansas.
Yes.
I'm sure you understand why, to get my children out of the Vallejo Unified School District.
Oh, my God. You moved to a real, real part of America. What happened?
I did. Well, now that he's going on 18, it's been very hard for me to get a job here. I can't teach because I'm nobody's cousin, you know, in a small town. That's kind of...
Oh, you moved into a real backwater, a real hickey area. And they're very, very... okay, got it.
Got it. And so he's turning 18 in a few weeks. I have a chance to move to Florida, and he wants to stay. And, you know, and I don't want to overmother him, and I respect your opinion because...
Well, that's a tough one. Now, you're a single mother?
I am.
Are there other children?
I have a 14-year-old daughter.
And you are a teacher by profession?
By profession, and now I work at a bank making, you know, nothing.
Oh, okay, but wait a minute, but you're still holding your head up. I mean, you're still earning a living. You're not begging anyone for anything, right?
Not begging, no. I actually even went back and waitressed. And in Arkansas,
You know, this is a heartbreaking story that a mother with such strength and a desire to hold a family together is doing this. It's amazing to me. So what you're saying is it's almost like the grapes of wrath. You have to move now again to make a living, and your son doesn't want to go with you. Is that the story?
I was making $2.15 an hour waiting tables.
Oh, my God. What a disgrace.
So hard.
With a college degree. But so what's waiting for you in Florida?
I would be doing marketing, you know, making $50,000 a year, which is huge money for me.
Absolutely. Okay, now let's start with reality. That's a jump you have to take. If you don't do it, you look back with regret, your life will be over, and you can't let your son do that. You have to sit down with your son, and you have to say to him, do you have any idea what this means to me, your mother, that if I don't take this job, I'm probably going to wind up waiting tables when I'm 50, 60 years old. Do you want that to happen to me? You got to give him a guilt trip. Why does he want to stay there? What, does he have a girlfriend?
Yes. See, I knew you would know.
Well, I mean, what else is a boy driven by, okay? All right, so there's a way to deal with this as well. You got to say to him, I understand you really have strong feelings for that young lady, but how old is he now, 17?
17, he'll be 18 in June.
And what is he going to do if he stays there, pump gasoline?
I don't know. He has a job one day a week, and he's failing all of his classes.
Well, I'm sorry. So who's going to take care of him if he stays there?
He believes he has it. He can do it all by himself.
Then you have a choice, which is to let him fall by the wayside and come and move in with you in 3 months after you leave, because that's what's going to happen.
That's what I thought.
I know you don't want to let go of him because he's your flesh and blood, and he came from within your own being. And there's no stronger bond in the world than a mother and her child. And you don't want to leave your cub, no matter how old he is. But let me tell you, it's not going to get any easier for you if you stay there. You cannot stay there. You have no choice, by the way. There's not even a clear... You have no choice. You have to go.
I have to go.
Make believe I'm your brother, your older brother, right? You got a $50,000, you're making $2 an hour there, you got a $50,000 a year job waiting for you in Florida, and you have a son who basically thinks he's going to make it on his own when he has no skill, no training, and no job. I'll tell you how this plays out. 3 months after you leave, he's going to be in your, moving in with you wherever you are. He has to go down there.
I gave it all up for him to get him out of that Vallejo school district. I gave up teaching, everything. Because I could see the writing on the wall. When I drove up there and I saw a school in that Fairfield area with a 300-student melee, I thought, there's no way I can let my son go here. And we had
I understand. So you, now, wait a minute. So you moved for your son. I did the same thing in my life. Most of my decisions in my life when I was younger were made for my children. Okay, let's start with that. But there comes a time when you have to put your survival, both mental and financial, ahead of everything. You must put down all of the guidebooks and just get practical and real. You got no man in the house. You're the only breadwinner. You have to put that ahead of everything, okay? But you got to sit down first and talk to your son and tell him you love him, and you tell him why you're leaving, that you don't want to get stuck here when you're 60 years old making $2 an hour and wind up with like nothing on this, like roadkill in Arkansas, wherever you are, and you must move. You wish to God he would come to his senses and come with you. His girlfriend could visit, but if he doesn't, then God bless him. He's going to have to live there on his own, and you have no money to give him. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It's the Savage Nation. Well, I'm not going to talk about Romney versus Obama because we're not ready to do that. It's too many months out. I can't do this for 16 months. What do you think I am, Fox News? Chicago, Bill, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Mike, nice. What you said to that woman was exactly what you needed to hear. And a year from now, she's going to thank God that she called you. You talked with passion, confidence, conviction. You saved that woman's life tonight.
You know what? Let me tell you something. I talked to her as I would if she were like a relative of mine, a sister, a daughter. I mean, she doesn't have a man in her life. She's acting like a real hero. Look, she's living for her kid. And now the kid, of course, is following, you know, his hormones. She can't let her life get derailed by that child's decision.
Exactly. And I'm telling you, I'm in my cabin. I was rooting for you all the way.
Thank you. No, well, look, the fact of the matter is, any man would do that for any woman on earth if the man had any decency. He'd answer the question as honestly as he could. I don't know the woman. I felt it was a moral obligation of mine to answer it the way I would answer a relative. That's why I think my show is successful.
It is, Mike. Nice job.
Hold on the line. I'm going to send you a copy of Trickle Up Poverty. You can have it in the cab in case you get Obama in the cab. You can pass it on to him, whatever, since you're in Chicago. Stay on the line. Well, I'll be back very shortly here after the top of the hour stuff. You know what that is, don't you? News, the weather, the what's going on in the world. You're going to hear more about this, more about that, but you won't hear more about me. Until you stay tuned for more of the Savage Nation, which will come back very quickly. We'll do the news, the breaking news. We'll do the Emmanuel, whatever, the Strauss-Kahn perp walk. We'll do the Schwarzenegger love child, and we'll do the lifestyle, okay?
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Hey, wait a minute. It's not Monday. It's Tuesday. Fats, come on, man. I'm a friend of yours. Let's just stop. This is the Savage Nation. It definitely is not Monday. It is Tuesday. And I guess we're covering some of the news of the day. I mean, you can go to my website, michaelsavage.com, or any of the other great websites, and you can see all the news. But we're doing a little of the news and a little of the personal. I'm being lifestyle coach again, mixed in with the news, because at a certain point, how much can you talk about the same stories from morning till night? Many of you are news talk radio fanatics. You start in the morning by listening to The Golfer, then you move on to Wallbanger, and then you wait for me, and you heard it before. And I don't want to alienate you by talking about the same story. If I have something unique to say about a story, I will say it. But to just repeat the same thing over and over again is not the way I think you want me to go. On the other hand, I'm not going to ignore the news. There's a lot of news out there. To me, one of the biggest stories is that nearly 20% of Obamacare waivers are for gourmet restaurants, nightclubs, and fancy hotels in guess whose backyard? Nancy Pelosi. How in the world can anyone not see the level of corruption in the Obama administration and how it dwarfs that of any previous 10 administrations? This is the most corrupt administration in American history. Now I'm going to take some lifestyle calls, okay? New York, WOR, Mazal. Mazal, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I'm not sure if I should continue my studies with a PhD or perhaps go into publishing or writing.
Question, what's your field? What is your field of endeavor?
Literature, English.
Okay, what do you have right now, a master's?
Master's.
And you want to get a PhD. Have you started your studies yet?
No, I took a couple of courses, but they're not applicable to a PhD.
Let me explain something. A PhD is a research degree. That's number one. It's going to take you 3 to 5 years. Is that correct?
Probably.
Maybe more. Mm-hmm. And what are you going to get at the end of the 5 years? Let's say you get that PhD. You're going to have to apply for a teaching position in an English department, correct?
Right.
There are no jobs. They're dismissing people, unfortunately. And so, therefore, although you have a scholar's, inclinations, in the real world, there's no room for scholars in America anymore. No. It's like the buggy whip. I mean, where's room for scholars in America today?
I don't know.
Let me finish. You could go into publishing, which is also a very, very risky road, incidentally. I mean, have you looked at the jobs available in publishing right now?
I do not receive any responses, and I published my own book, The Silent Sister, and it's very difficult just to have people respond.
Correct. Let me explain something. The publishing industry is contracting rapidly. You had major bankruptcies last year of bookstore chains, which had ramifications into the bottom line of publishers who got stiffed for money that was owed by, I believe, what was it, the Borders chain that went bankrupt? I wouldn't look in the publishing industry for a position today. It's not 1960 where there was an unlimited future. So, yes, you're an intelligent young woman. You love literature. You probably eat, drink, and sleep ideas and words, correct?
You've got it.
Okay, so you're asking how can you make a living and enjoy your life as well and have your intellect engaged? That's the toughest question on earth. Well, there's no tougher question, I mean, other than life and death questions, but there's almost no tougher question to answer than that because I have no answer for you. In other words, I've told you both choices are bad, and I'm reluctant to give you that answer, but I'm telling you, having looked forward and backward in my own life, there are things I would have done a little differently. For me, maybe it's worked out in some ways and not in others. But the life of the scholar, fraught with peril and a life of poverty, your entire life is going to be begging and working for people who are basically your intellectual inferior your whole life, who got appointed for reasons other than their scholarship, no doubt based upon either their race or their immigration status, who are going to wind up being your boss telling you that they're better than you are with a lower degree. So do you want to go down that road? No. So then you say publishing. You're going to start like they used to start in the 60s in the mailroom and think you're going to wind up as a publisher? It's not going to happen anymore. The chances of it happening are very, very dim. So where does that leave you now? Let's say both choices are not valid. What would you do then?
Continue teaching in a local high school, I guess.
Well, let me say something. Life could be worse than teaching in a local high school. That's if there's a job in a local high school. You know, there are many people who are, let us say, given towards the arts, but there's no road towards success in the arts in terms of a living, let's put it that way. And if you don't have a private family fortune to rely upon, you'll have to do what thousands, if not tens of thousands, of other people with such inclinations have done in the past. You teach, or if they were musicians, they gave music lessons when they really didn't want to teach kids how to play the piano, but they had to do it. And on the side, you maintain your interest, which becomes your avocation until it can become your vocation. I know it's a terrible dose of reality that I'm throwing your way, and it's probably very depressing to listen to this, but I think I'm doing you a favor at the end of the day. Don't waste your time with a PhD.
Thank you. Number one.
And number two, go get a teaching job if you can, and then see what your options are. That's all. I think that was a fair answer, too. It's, you know, here's the problem with being a talk radio host. We're very opinionated. We are bullheaded in many ways. We give ideas. I'm not sitting here with nuance, okay? I didn't give you like a long psychiatric analysis. If you went to a psychiatrist, it would have cost you $25,000 to have the same answer after 5 months. He would have had you in. He would have asked you if your uncle, who brought you into literature. And then when you told him it was your uncle, who was very intelligent, and he asked you if he did anything to you on the side. And you say, what do you mean by what did anything to me? He taught me how to. And he would imply that maybe he touched you inappropriately in a hotel room in the Sofitel when you were 3 years old. And that's why you became interested in Proust, in remembrances of things past, when in fact you didn't even realize it was a psychological issue for you rather than a literary issue. And before long, he'd have you in a nut house at Bellevue. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Now, look, let me explain something to you. This is a political radio show primarily. Now, I do talk about other things. You know, you talk about taking chances in life. I've taken chances at several points in my life. They could have gone the complete other way. For me, they worked out. I had no choice. I had to move on, okay? I walked away from positions that were lucrative because I couldn't work with a certain personality. It would have killed me. I walked away when I had nothing waiting for me. And I just had faith that I would find something tomorrow. And I did. But maybe the times were a little different. I am reinventing talk radio as you listen to this show. This is a purely political show with a little of other things. But now I'm switching the set and the frame. And now I'm doing life coach stuff mixed in with politics. It's a risk. I don't know whether it's turning off a good percentage of the audience or turning on a whole new audience. I don't know. My intuition tells me that it doesn't matter right now because there's an old adage. If you bait your hook with your heart, the fish will always bite. It has to interest the host. I know talk show hosts, by the way, who I talk with, let's say, from time to time, a few of them by email and this and that. You know what? Most of them are burned out. They can't take it anymore. They're tired of the news. They're tired of repeating the same stories. And the audience probably is also picking up on that because they're inherently the same as the talk show host, who is just another citizen of the United States of America. So unless you have the capacity to shift gears as I do, you can't try this. So they're stuck. I'm not stuck. I can reinvent myself because this is myself. So I hope you'll go along on the ride because, frankly, I don't think there's anything more interesting than the human condition. And what is more political at the end of the day than the human condition? Let's go to Sacramento because the story you're about to hear is true, and it's shocking, and it's only in America. Nate in Sacramento, tell us your story. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I was wondering if I should move out of my county because of the enemies within, and they're real, for those of you that don't believe it. My son was in a middle school, and for a year, the vice principal was trying to talk me into putting him on some kind of drug, telling me it would be good for him. He's reaching a certain age where he's interested in girls. And so I never went along with their programs. I didn't want to use their counselor, and I didn't want to use the sociologist at the school.
So, no, I don't blame you. They're brainwashers. They're re-education counselors. So what happened?
Well, what happened was one day my wife got a call to come down to the school from the vice principal, and he knows she's home because the guy lives right down the street. So she showed up there, and there's a police officer there with my son. And he said, I'm going to give your son a citation. That's what he told my wife. And the other thing he told my wife right when she first walked into the office was said, you probably have pornography and guns at your house. He's never met my wife before, but we've never been arrested. We've never had any problems.
Who said you probably have guns and pornography?
The police officer that was at the school had told my wife that right when she walked into the office to pick up.
All right. Do you have the police officer's name?
I know his name.
Okay. Make sure you keep it on file because he should lose his job for saying that to you. That's number one. What happened? First of all, how old was your son at this time?
This happened 2 years ago, by the way. But this is leading up to the other things that have happened.
Well, wait. How old was your son at the time?
He was 13. And when this happened to him,
What did they give him the citation for the first time?
Right. He gave him a citation, they called it. But really what it was we got a mail from the district attorney. It was really a felony, first strike offense. And
Hold on. You're mixing me up. What did your son allegedly do?
Well, he drew a stick figure on a table, laying down, no gender, and he's in an IEP program, which is individual educational program, which is just about 8 kids in a little classroom. And he said that the girl that was sitting next to him felt like her life was threatened.
He drew a stick figure on his own table, and they gave him a terrorism charge for that?
Right, a felony and a misdemeanor.
I don't believe it. I absolutely don't believe this. This is something out of the Nazi concentration camp era. This is happening in Sacramento County?
My son said that he wanted to kill that girl. When I went to the teacher, I had her sign.
Whoa, stop it. Your son said he wanted to kill the girl, or they said that your son wanted to kill the girl? Who said they wanted to kill the girl?
The police officer wrote that the girl said that my son said that. Then I said, you better be careful with those words you use. He reneged on that, and then he wrote that she felt like he wanted to kill her, that he wanted to kill her. So he changed the story.
Yeah, but he's also a child. Excuse me. Let's start with the beginning. This is a child who obviously has some emotional issues. I thought that our schools are so tolerant of people with emotional issues. And now they're calling him a terrorist because he drew a stick figure and a girl next to him said she felt threatened. Yeah. Now, did you get a lawyer yet for any of this?
I'm being pushed out of my trade by illegals. So I had to.
Well, stop for a minute. Did you get a lawyer yet?
Use my money to get a lawyer to protect my kid.
You're not answering me. I'm not listening. You're not answering me. And if you stop it. Stop it. If you can't hold a conversation with me, I have to move on. Did you get a lawyer or not?
I had a lawyer. He got him off the charges, but they still had a probation officer come here, go through his room, ask him if he smokes marijuana, searching all his little underwear drawers. They found a baggie with his baby teeth in it. She thought it was drugs at first. And because he's so innocent, because I sheltered him a little bit.
All right, but what does your lawyer say? Let's make it easy for the listener out there. What does the lawyer say you should do now?
My lawyer, we went to court, and he got the charges dropped, but I still had to pay the money, still had to go through the probation. But
all right, so what is your complaint then? You got the charges dropped, other than the fact that they harassed you. What is your complaint at this time?
Well, my complaint is the fact that they were even allowed. I had evidence that this thing, whole thing was built up from the person that was in charge of.
So what would you like to do? You want to sue the school district?
Oh, I would love to.
Why don't you have your lawyer sue? Wait, so stop for a minute. I'm not a lawyer. Why don't you have your lawyer sue the school district for every possible crime and charge he can come up with? I can't help you any further. I'm sorry. This is a legal question. I'm not going to answer legal questions. Atlanta, Georgia. Tim, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Mike, I retired from teaching about 6 or 8 years ago after 22 years. Since then, I've been doing a lot of writing, and I've been told I'm a good writer. I write every day. And I'd like to just know whether you think, you know, it's hard to make a living. I mean, I can't live on a small retirement. I might have to go back to teaching. I still have a certification in Florida.
Right.
But I love to write, and I've written a lot of good stuff. I've written some children's books, a lot of children's poetry, some really zany stuff, a book about a, you know, recommissioning back to the
church. But an avocation is not necessarily a vocation. And for you to wait for a publication that may or may not come is a risk that you're not willing to take because you can't live on your small pension. So you have almost no choice here. I don't see why you can't do both. Of course you're going to be exhausted if you go back and teach. You're going to have less time to write. But the financial exigencies are such that you have to go back to teach, right?
I'm going to have to do something, yeah.
Well, you cannot make a living as a writer. Just because you wish to do so. It doesn't work that way. Whether it's you or it's me or it's anyone else, it's all based upon marketability, marketability, marketability. Can you get a publisher to give you an advance? Obviously, the answer is no. There are more proposals going begging than you could ever imagine. Publishers are unwilling to take chances on unknown authors because most of the books that are published lose money. So most of the money is going towards people like me. I mean, I'm going to be very honest with you. I hate to say it, but I'm not going to, you know, fib to you. I'm finally in the driver's seat. There were many years that I used to grouse about it. I'm so brilliant. I'm so smart. I wrote such good books. Why are my advances so modest? Why can't I get the big advance? And they used to tell me 20 years ago that almost all the money is going into the hands of the few people who they can pretty much be sure are going to knock out a bestseller. Well, I finally am in that position, but it took me 40, 30 years to get here. I struggled. There were years I couldn't make a living as a writer. You don't think I would rather not have sat home in my pajamas and a bathrobe and had a coffee in the morning and looked out the window and had an inspiration rather than constipation and written a book and sent it off to my agent and my publisher? Like, oh, you got another advance coming through. You can sit in your pajamas and you could drink all the coffee you want. At night you can drink wine and you can go out with your friends in the cafes and there's another check for $50,000 coming. It didn't happen. It doesn't work that way. Okay, you could be a brilliant man, and I'm not negating your potential brilliance, but it does not translate into marketability. And it goes for every art on the planet.
Savage.
All right, Savage Nation, French react to socialist IMF chief's perp walk, Arnold Schwarzenegger, father to child with household staff member. Nearly 20% of Obamacare waivers are for gourmet restaurants. nightclubs and fancy hotels in Nancy Pelosi's backyard. Those are the main political topics that I've seen today, but we're talking as well about lifestyle questions. And I can see by the callers I'm getting, they range in age from older guys to younger women and younger men. And I'm not surprised by this. I've been in radio for 16, 17 years. I have an authoritative position. I have a gifted voice. I've been gifted with a wonderful, let us say, a patriarchal voice. It's not just that my voice is deep and sonorous. It's that behind it, there's a sense of reality and truth and honesty. Although, I mean, there's a lot of people with deep voices. You hear them all the time on radio, you know, reading ads. You know, you're listening to ABC News, you know, the standard. So it's not just the voice. It's like people can hear something in my voice that lets them want to ask me a question about their life. Now, let's go back to you, the listener, who doesn't have a lifestyle question. Why would you listen to such a thing? Because it's of human interest. There's nothing more interesting nor anything. There's nothing more political than a human, the human next to you. Every person next to you is the product of millions of years of human evolution. It's the thing that always amazes me. It's why the human being is sacred, especially to those of us in the West. And it's hard to understand the mindset of the Islamists who see the world through such twisted, distorted, throwback eyes that they don't even see the miracle of human life. All they see is how to kill it and destroy it and crush it and kill it because it doesn't conform to their vision of an 8th century book. Okay? That's what we're facing on the planet today. And if we don't win the battle, we go into 1,000 years of darkness. That's what's at stake. The same that was at stake when a Churchill laid out the battle for Britain. That it was Christendom versus Nazism. It's the same exact battle all over again, only it's got new players. But make no mistake about it. It's either we win or they win. If they win, it's 1,000 years of darkness. And that's why you have to join the fight. You have to understand that the vigilance is what it takes. But in the midst of it, you have to lead your life. And what does that come down to? Everything we're talking about. Your job, your children, you, your aging problems, the issues of aging, whether it's a pet that's dying, what that's doing to you. You know, I had a who did I run into last week? A guy I know. Big guy, must be 6'5", 295 pounds. I needed him for a certain security situation. I had met him months before. Wonderful, nice man, former military. This man, as big as and as strong as he is, told me that he had just put his dog to sleep after 16 years, a little dachshund. And he didn't know what to say. He was besides himself with grief. And I said, I didn't know what to say. I didn't want to get into it because I had my own situation. I said, look, you know, losing an animal is sometimes as bad as losing a human. He said to me, it's often worse. I said, I understand that from people who tell me that. And then he said he's told men the story of him losing the dog and having to take him to have him euthanized. He said the men broke into tears and they were just as big and as strong as he was. So now, what does that tell you? It tells you that beneath all of us, there's a human being inside, rather the image. You can't just live on the television images that they're putting out. They're all false images. So what we're trying to get at here is you, 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 and more you. Washington, Ashley, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello. In regards to what you were saying earlier in your show about you don't know if you're gaining or losing an audience, I'd say
right.
That you're definitely gaining a huge audience of young people even. I mean, I discovered your show. A lot of people around my age listen to your show, and I'm sure there are lots of young people.
But what do you hear in this show that you find worth spending your time? That you have the texting and the Twitter. Why are you listening to Savage today?
You know what you're talking about, and you say it, you know, in
clearly.
A pretty bold statement. In a
okay,
that,
and that's so lacking in our society. In other words, the politician is always going to give you an answer that has no answer in it.
Exactly.
You're going to get an answer that is a worthless answer. Whatever you ask him, you're going to get a slippery fish. Did you ever go fishing as a young girl, Ashley?
I have. My dad.
Do you remember when you would see a fish in a shallow water? When you were a little kid, you would reach for the fish, and due to refraction, light refraction, the fish was not where you thought it was. It was like 3-6 inches away from that because of the refraction of light through the water.
I do remember that, yes.
That's the way you feel society is, I'll bet, right?
Of course.
Now, whatever you reach for, it's not there because it's not what you thought it was. That's number one. And no one's telling you what the refraction, what the refracted image actually looks like. And I try to give people the refracted image of what it really is, as opposed to the fish being over here when it's over there. And I think that's why you're listening, Ashley. So what's your question today?
I didn't really have a question. I just wanted to give you that statement.
That's beautiful. Well, you know what? I have a question for you.
What's that?
You want my question for you? What year in school? What year are you in school?
I'm currently not in, I'm currently not in college right now, but...
That's so it's not, I don't say it with a shame. It's like people used to say I have cancer. I mean, you don't have to be ashamed to not be in college. Obviously, it's a choice you made. So what are you doing right now?
I am working two jobs and I have an apartment. I'll probably go to school when I'm...
When you're ready for it, when you're good and ready for it. Okay, well, you know what? Let me send you a copy of my book as a gift, because you're such a hardworking, serious person. Maybe it'll give you some comfort and some intelligence on what's going on in this country under Obama. Stay in the line for trickle-up poverty. Now, let us look at the news stories out there. Let's go to Pauline in New York, who has an opinion on Schwarzenegger and the love child. Pauline, welcome to the Savage Nation from WOR. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I was thinking about it. Arnold kept his love child a secret for 10 years. Why come out now and destroy your family? I think he was either being blackmailed or he was going to be blackmailed, and I was wondering what your opinion might be.
Don't know, but let's put it to you this way. The wife knew. Maria Shriver knew all these years. So she kept the secret because she was, in that sense, a very loyal partner to him in his political career. But once the political career came to an end, perhaps they figured it's now safe for them to talk about the love child. You know, what do you think?
I guess that's an option too. But
I mean, they both, in other words, it was a mutual thing. Let's release the story now. It'll garner sympathy for Maria Shriver. It'll make Arnold look like a, you know, like a dirty dog, which is obviously what the story is here. I mean, you know, she was tired. Remember a week ago they said she was tired of his, when she moved out a week ago or so to it, when they said she moved out, she was tired of his womanizing, right? Now all of a sudden it's the love child. So this was an orchestrated sequence of events. You know, I'm going to tell you something that people are going to find very strange in what I'm going to say. I am not in favor of a love child. I'm not in favor of a child who has an illegitimate set of parents and has to live in the shadows. But I will take that choice over abortion. How do you like that? I have to say that you have to give a man credit who is willing not to tell the woman that he accidentally had a child with, go ahead and have an abortion. I would say that he did the right thing. How do you like that? Now, people are shocked. Let them be shocked. It doesn't matter to me. I'll tell you how I see it. Life, life, life. Therefore, choose life. They chose to have the child rather than to kill the child. Don't you understand what I just said to you? You know, I once had a man on the show, I remember now, 15 years ago. As a matter of fact, he was a lawyer, a very fine person. And as I got to know him, you know what he told me? He was aborted by his mother. He was not going to be aborted. The mother tried to abort him. But he survived the fetus that he was, survived the abortion. And he became one of the finest people I had ever met. And he was trying to tell me and everyone else on this show what a human life is. You don't know what a human life is. You don't know what the potential is of that pile of protoplasm that you throw in the garbage. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We must reduce the deficit. We must put everything on the table. We've got to look at cuts for sure, waste, fraud, abuse, duplication, obsolescence, you name it. We've got to also look
at Medicare on the table, our entitlements on the table,
yes,
in your judgment?
Yes.
Is there Democratic support in the House and or the Senate for these kinds of deep budget cuts? I've not heard it so far.
Well, there's a reality check on even what the Speaker Boehner said. First of all, you're never going to reduce the deficit if you're just looking at this much of the budget. There aren't enough cuts you can make to reduce
the
deficit.
So she's into cutting, waste, fraud, and abuse. Well, I would say we should start with her jet travel on, well, she was speaker and riding high on military jets. That's number one. Number two, we can look into how in the world did 20% of Obamacare waivers wind up in Nancy Pelosi's backyard for restaurants, nightclubs, and fancy hotels. How is this possible? To me, it sounds illegal. How can you get an Obamacare? You pay somebody off and you get a waiver? You're a restaurant and you schmear somebody, in other words, like in Panama? That's what we become under the Obama administration? You have a big fancy nightclub in San Francisco and you want a waiver because you can't afford to pay health care for your employees. So you schmear off some bag man in San Francisco who takes it up the chain and you get a waiver? Are you kidding me? This is unbelievable to me. This is as indictable as anything I've ever heard in my life. Now, of course, you're not going to find fingerprints on this because they've already put out the PR saying that Nancy Pelosi had nothing to do with the waivers in her own backyard. Well, someone had something to do with the waivers. Whoever gave these waivers could be indicted if we had a divided government, if we had a separation of powers, if we still had a functional two-party system, not an old girls network here where, you know, you do it and I do it and let the people be damned. You know the phrase that gets me as agitated as any that I hear now? We have a bipartisan Congress, as though that's a bad thing. Well, boys and girls, let me explain something to you listening out there in Savage Land. A bipartisan Congress is what was intended by our Constitution. It was intended by the founding geniuses who created this great system of government. The day you have a government that is not bipartisan, the day you have a government that doesn't argue and disagree over things is the day you're living in North Korea. The less bipartisanship you have, the more dictatorship you have. Check it out around the world. Wherever there is no dissension, there is absolute authority coming down from the top. And I don't want to live in such a country, do you? And yet you hear from the Democrats, oh, we have such bipartisanship now. Why? Because the Iron Lady with her big hammer is no longer hammering down bills that nobody can afford, that you wind up with corruption like this? No, my friends, if we had a legitimate government, there would be an investigation tomorrow about the Obamacare waivers, not only in San Francisco, but in Nevada. Did you read that it just came down? The entire state of Nevada was given an Obamacare waiver. The entire state. This is Harry Reid, who pushed Obamacare down our throats, now says, oh, the casinos don't have to comply. The mom and pop businesses don't have to comply. Why? Because I am God and you are just a peon and nobody can touch me. Because I am an untouchable. Well, in the 50s, there was a TV show called The Untouchables about Elliot Ness, an FBI agent who went after the so-called untouchables. Where are the FBI agents of today who go after the untouchables who are not in organized crime but in government itself? And what do we do when we reach a point in America where the government itself becomes filled with untouchables and there is no one to go after them? Tell me what we the people do. Well, we did it. We voted the bums out in November, and what did we get? We got Scott Brown in Massachusetts, who soon after getting elected said, hi, just kidding, I was really a Kennedy all along. What else did we get? Virtually nothing for the money. What did we get? Well, I can put it in more pictorial terms, but it's a family show. And so what are we going to do now? We got a choice to vote. Who are they giving us now? Who's left to vote for here? One liberal Republican after another, a guy who's unelectable, Pawlenty, unelectable, zero unelectable, all of them unelectable. The only one who has a ghost of a chance is Romney, and I'm not so sure he can win. Not when he comes in with such baggage such as Romney Care, and not when he has almost zero on the conservative scale. And that is because, although he's certainly a better choice than Obama, the conservative masses are not going to come out for him the way they would if he really had the credentials of, let's say, cracking down on illegal aliens. He won't do that. Absolutely won't do that. So where does that leave us, we the people? Well, it's where we are. That's where it leaves us. It leaves us exactly where we are. So let's take some calls now on the Savage Nation and see what's on your mind on the program. Sacramento, California, Tom, fire away. What's on your mind?
Hi, I got a master's in social work 4 years ago. I got a new family, baby. We're going to have more babies. I want to make, you know, enough money for my family, but I work for CPS here in the North State, and debating whether to stay and try to move up or, you know, go to the private sector or get another degree.
So you have an MSW right now?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and what are you doing for a living?
I do CPS work, Child Protective Services.
Okay, and what you want to do is obviously make a better living for yourself, and there's a very limited chance of moving up rapidly in a government job, but it's a very secure job before you throw it away.
Yeah.
You should know that in this day and age, a government job is golden, you know. Don't throw it away so fast. You have a very good job and a good pension, correct?
Correct.
All right, so it's okay to be, let us say, ambitious. But in a time like this, unless there's something out there begging for you to come along, I wouldn't jump so fast in a time like this. Doesn't mean that you can't keep your job and do something else on the side, couldn't you?
Yeah, I'm looking at maybe like night school for a law degree or something.
Well, okay, but then now wait a minute. Law degree is years and years. You're a smart guy. You want to move up. That's a good idea. But do you have any idea how much money that's going to cost you? And then when you get out of law school, are there any jobs waiting for lawyers today? The answer is almost none. So you better investigate that right now. Go on the internet and see how many lawyers are begging for work. They're taking jobs out of their field because they can't find jobs in the legal profession. No, I was thinking of something else. Why can't you and your wife open a small business, for example? Perhaps an internet business or buy a small business in town. Does your wife work?
She doesn't. She's staying home with their baby, raising it, and we're going to have more.
All right. Well, that's a job unto itself and probably the most important job a woman could do. I am very lucky that I had a stay-at-home mom. God bless her. She's in heaven cooking for God from time to time with everyone else's lovely mother. But the fact of the matter is, she didn't have a job, and I was glad she was home for me. God knows what kind of trouble I would have gotten in addition to the trouble I got in with her being at home, keeping an eagle eye on me. So that's a great thing to do. So the burden is on you as the principal breadwinner. I would keep that job as a social worker, and I would look into augmenting my income right now with additional work or an investment in a small business with a friend. Maybe you have a friend who wants to go into a business with you or buy a small business that's viable and producing where you put in a little money and you see it grow. You know, in a time like this, you can make money as well. It's not all doom and gloom out there. You drive around San Francisco, every restaurant is packed to the rafters, so somebody has money. The businesses are doing very well. There's got to be something you could buy, a yogurt shop, a bagel shop. God only knows what's out there, but there are many opportunities for you, and I would not get rid of my civil service job if I were you. I'd recommend that very, very strongly. Let's take this caller right now, Carol in Virginia. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind? You're on the Savage Nation.
Okay. Hi. It was a year ago, Easter, and I went to get my mother some pastry. The pastry shop was open, and she was ill. And there was a beautiful dog there, and he had a story to tell. And nobody speaks dog. I do.
So what happened? We only have a minute, so tell me what happened, Carol.
Okay. His friend got hit by a car. And so I brought him home and went and found his friend by the side of the road, and I moved her off. And Thursday, I went out to look for plants, and he was on my mind. His family...
Your dog's best friend got killed or injured?
His dog friend got killed, run over by a car.
All right, and your dog is now heartbroken, is that the question?
Oh, he is still in grief, and he was with his other family for
a year. What can you do about it? There's no advice anyone can give you for heartbreak. You know, there was a sign that I will leave you with, Carol, when I was a young man in New York and trying to figure out how to make a living and what to do and where to go, and I was a humble social worker and then a teacher. There was a little store that says we fix everything but broken hearts. It was a fix-it shop. I'll never forget it.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Now listen up.
You know, there's a lot of stories out there, but perhaps the corruption of the Obama administration is the biggest story. Oh, sure, we've got the story about the socialist IMF chief's perp walk and Arnold Schwarzenegger's love child. But did you hear that 20% of Obamacare waivers are for gourmet restaurants, nightclubs, and fancy hotels in Nancy Pelosi's backyard? Did you hear that HHS grants a waiver for the entire state of Nevada, Senator Reid's home state? The entire state of Nevada is not required to buy Obamacare policies. I swear to God, this is worse than Argentina, Venezuela at their peak. It's unbelievable to me how degenerated this country has become under this corrupt communist Marxist administration. Romney hauls in $10 million in just 8 hours. Rick Perry of Texas. Rick Perry of Texas is now thinking of running. I would vote for him in a minute. That's a real conservative as opposed to Romney. But let's go back to the perp walk of the IMF chief, who, to me, I don't like his politics. I don't like the IMF's actions. First of all, let's start with what they did to him. Based on the accusations of a lowly maid, who I truly have no belief that this guy would try to rape a maid. It makes no sense. But he looks like Madoff's brother. Already conspiracy theories are swirling. The international press and the blogosphere have theories about how and whether the IMF chief had been set up for a fall. I talked about it yesterday. Remember, who is he? Socialist, former communist, primary challenger to weakened French President Sarkozy. And in fact, they expected him to be the next president of France. Now, he had a weakness for women. So there's a plausible story that he could have sexually assaulted a maid in the New York hotel where he was staying, right? Or he could have been set up. However, supporters of his says it's a conspiracy. They say it's not like him. Everyone knows that his weakness is seduction. That's how they got him. One of the more popular sources of blog-based conspiracy theories came from an interview he gave to the French paper Liberation on April 28th, in which he predicted his enemies would use his proclivity for promiscuity against him. In the piece cited by Business Insider and elsewhere, Strauss-Kahn proclaimed his three weaknesses are the money, women, and my Jewishness. Oh, well, I don't want to hear about the race part already. He's screaming. That already I could do without. The Voice of Russia blog said the modern American society is sick, and the diagnosis is political correctness. So a personal scheme against a rich foreigner is quite a plausible explanation of what happened with Strauss-Kahn. Who's the lawyer he hired? Some guy from Hollywood, Braffman. He represented Michael Jackson and son P. Diddy Combs. I don't know how well he did. But there are conspiracy theories. Nevertheless, his career is over, which is a good thing for the world, certainly a good thing for freedom, but not necessarily a good thing for justice. And, of course, there's another related story, which is the issue of Arnold Schwarzenegger's love child, and that's something to think about. 1-800-449-8255. Nouriel Roubini is not yet convinced that Strauss-Kahn was not set up. He doesn't believe yet that he was not set up. In other words, he believes it could be. And Roubini is no dummy. I mean, we know him from his economic prognostications. He's a continuous naysayer, really. That's what he is, right? But here Roubini in CNBC says he's not yet convinced that Kahn was not set up. And he also said what I said yesterday. DSK is innocent until proven guilty. One cannot rule out a setup as a smear campaign against him had started in the French press close to Sarko. And I mean, I have to go along with that as a plausible theory, right? He is innocent until proven guilty. So that's all I will say on this at that time. Now, the French elite's reaction to the Dominique Strauss-Kahn affair is that it's a national embarrassment. The chief himself woke up in a jail cell on Rikers Island. This is a big fall down from all socialists who fly first class. I don't know if you know that. Did you know that socialists fly first class? It's sort of a takeoff on the old Liberté, Equalité, Fraternité. And, of course, you've got to understand that all socialists are liars, or they wouldn't be socialists. In fact, I've never met a socialist who wasn't either an abuser of women, a thief, and a liar. I've not met one. That could be that there are some. It could be some of you listening to the show are socialists who are not womanizers, not liars. But I haven't met you yet, so you'll have to forgive me. You would be the exception, not the rule. He stayed in a $3,000 a night hotel and flew first class. Has there ever been a socialist government in which the people at the top didn't live at least as well as the coupon-clipping plutocrats of capitalism? Huh. Well. See, but the good news is this is very bad for the IMF, France, and Greece. Right? This is very good for us, though. And you have to look into this. You have to look into this. Well, anyway, it's an affair that led to his downfall. It's bonfire of the vanities, and here we go again. All this and more can be found on michaelsavage.com. I'll conclude with two major stories that shouldn't be that should not be ignored. 51% of Pakistanis are sad about the death of bin Laden. Why are we giving them any money? But the big story that I found today from the LA Times is that the Obama administration knew where bin Laden was living for at least 1 year. And that's coming from a retired Marine Corps general. He said a small group of White House officials was briefed last year about the compound where bin Laden was later found and killed. So the only question remains, the big pregnant question that the midstream media won't answer, is why did they do it on that night of May? Why did they wait so long? Okay? 1-800-449-8255. Take this one home. Nearly 20% of new Obamacare waivers are in Pelosi's backyard. The entire state of Nevada is exempt. If this is not corrupt, what is? I have a book coming out in September called Abuse of Power. Great title. No one's ever used it. Luckily, I got it. The cover is on michaelsavage.com. Coming in September, Savage's first thriller based on a true story. Now, it's not about Obama. It really isn't. What is it about? And I'm going to show you why, what I'm talking about it. Product description on Amazon from the New York Times bestselling author and controversial radio talk show host. Comes a high-intensity debut thriller, the story of a disgraced network journalist who uncovers a chilling terrorist plot. You want me to summarize this book for you, and you'll see where I'm going with this? Jack Hatfield is a hardened former war correspondent who rose to national prominence for his insightful, provocative commentary. But after being smeared as a bigot and extremist by a radical media watchdog group, he ultimately loses his job and finds himself working in obscurity as a freelance news producer in San Francisco. Hatfield is on a ride along with the SFPD bomb squad when a seemingly routine carjacking turns deadly. After police find several pounds of military-grade explosives in the Jack car, and when the FBI urges Hatfield to stay out of it, he knows he's onto something big. This event will open up a shadowy trail that leads Hatfield to Tel Aviv, London, Paris, and back again to the United States, where he works with a beautiful and seductive Yemeni intelligence agent and a veteran Green Beret to expose a terrorist group known as the Hand of Allah, and a plot within the highest corridors of power that will make 9/11 look like child's play. In this lightning-paced first thriller, spanning the globe from Europe and Israel to the back alleys of San Francisco's Chinatown, a reporter must make the choice between protecting his own life and investigating a terrorist cell whose goal is nothing less than total political control, no matter what the cost. That's a product description of my book, Abuse of Power. I guarantee you this. You say it's way ahead of the publication, but I'm so excited by it. I had to tell you about it and had to put the cover on my website months ahead. I'm doing it because I want to do it. Sacramento Anna, welcome to the program.
Dr. Savage, I like to eat meat sometimes, but I do feel conflicted because I love my pets. You know, I've got a great dog. I've had hamburgers.
I know. It's like I look at Teddy's leg. And he's only an 11-pound dog, and sometimes I grasp his entire thigh, and it's really the size of a kind of large chicken. And I joke with him, and I say, Teddy, if you're bad, I'm going to cook your leg. And I realize, God, I really don't want to kill this guy to eat him. But, I mean, no, it's hard. Like, how do you decide, I mean, which animal to eat, right?
That's right. And then if you go to, like, visit pigs or something, then they're all smart, and that makes it easier.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, look, it's you can easily become a vegetarian for ethical reasons, but you have to understand that being a vegetarian is very complex. And many of the young ladies do it for the right reasons because they love animals, but they're deficient in B12, B6, and iron, and they're walking around half crazy from dietary deficiencies. That's my whole point. They're not balancing out their diet. They think if they just eat tofu, okay, and then at night they go out and slam a needle in their arm or take ecstasy, they're going to be fine. And they're all screwed up from it. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You know, night falls over Manhattan, night falls over San Francisco, night falls over all of us, and then life itself falls at the end. Where is it written on my birth certificate, I ask myself today? I woke up and I said, where is it written I have to save Western civilization? Where is it written that I have to get up every day and carry this world on my shoulders? So I went and got my birth certificate. It has my name, where I was born, or when I was born. It has my mother's name and my father's name. But it doesn't say, Michael, you shall save Western civilization. You shall be required unto the 70 to scream your heart out as you watch the world going up in flames with quislings at every level of the U.S. government. You don't have to do that. What the heck are you doing it for? Just play rock and roll and do a two-dimensional radio show. You'll make more money, like the rest of them. Just have them call up and say, you're a great American. Tell them, yes, I'm a great American. That's all. Then when someone calls up and says, ditto, say ditto to you. That's all. That's what they used to. They want a John Nagy radio show. Republicans, good. Republicans going to save America. It's those dams that are no good. You got to vote for Republicans. Don't vote for them dams, no good. Republicans, good. Dems, bad. It's astounding. I don't know if the audience has gotten dumber or I've gotten dumber, but something's wrong here. I have never seen anything like it. The callers are getting stupider by the day. The media has gotten dumber by the day. And so maybe I'm getting stupider by the day. Maybe we've all gotten dumber together under Obama. It's possible that Obama's lowered the native intelligence of the American people by around 15 points since he seized power and he took control of the media. It is the Savage Nation. Take a virtual tour down the world of therapy. I've dimmed the lights, put up the jazz music, hung out my shingle, and now I'm playing Life Coach. Cost you nothing. Thousands of dollars of information. I'm just trying this out. I'm trying this hat on. I actually enjoy it. I find it to be a lot of fun. And I'll tell you, in addition to being helpful, I find that I can launch into a political discussion right off talking with one of my callers about their life problem, if it works, you know, if it fits. So let's go to the callers now. New York City, WOR June, you are on the Savage Nation. June, what's on your mind?
Last year, my mother passed away, and she left me some money, and my sister stole $40,000 from a bank account that she didn't think I knew about.
Mm.
She also stole the ring that was promised to my daughter for 30 years.
Mm.
And she took all the family pictures.
Oh, boy.
And I feel like I need therapy. It's such a betrayal.
But now, how well did you get along with this sister prior to this discovery of her theft?
That's why it's such a betrayal.
What, you're saying you were very close with her?
Yes. Yes.
But when your mother died, the true, let's say the greedy side of her emerged. Is that it?
The what? The greedy side of my sister?
Yes.
Yes, definitely.
Now, was she a poor woman? Was she in desperate straits?
My sister? She does have financial problems, but no, not
who,
in
who was more better off, you or her, financially? Okay. At the time of your mother's death, who was better off, you or your sister?
Equal.
Equal. So you're both struggling, in other words, and it should have been split.
Exactly, and that's the way my mother wanted it.
But what did your mother's will say?
My mother said she made a will, and then my sister swore up and down that there wasn't any.
Well, where is the will? Do you have a copy of your mother's will or no?
My sister said she went with my mother at one time to make out a will, and then when I confronted her with the will, she swore up and down that I'm crazy. There wasn't any will.
Oh. Well, it's a tough problem. Without a will, if you have a crook for a sister, the only recourse you would have would be a legal action against her, but that's going to cost you money, and there's no guarantee of a recovery in that regard. What are you going to go on? On what basis are you going to prove that your mother wanted you to have half the money or that she wanted you to have her ring? What proof do you have to that, to those statements?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any proof? Are there any third parties who would testify that those were your mother's wishes?
Well, there are my nephews, but they're siding with my sister.
Oh, there you go. And what are they? Her, the nephews are, of course, your sister's sons?
Yes.
All right. So you're ready. You have the family lined up around the money. You know, you're not, the only thing I can tell you is you're not alone. I know other families over a few pieces of silver, silverware, that they're breaking up over silverware. Can you believe it?
No, because I can't even believe this.
Well, I think the big thing here is your heartbreak rather than the loss of money. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay, the loss of a sister is bigger to you than the loss of the money, right?
Oh, yeah, and my
nephew.
All
right, so what I would say to you is work on that part of the quotient rather than the money per se. Because you may never see the money, but you may be able to understand that your sister never was who you thought she was, or the worst of her came out when your mother died. And you're going to have to say to yourself, your sister died when your mother died. Mayor Lee opposes shark fin soup ban. See what's important here in San Francisco? We have a new mayor, Mayor Lee. The other one went to, you know, the Peter Principle. He was so incompetent as a mayor, he became lieutenant governor. That's the Peter Principle. That's what Gavin Newsom got lost in cyberspace in Sacramento. No one's heard from him since. So the congenial Anytoosome Newsom went to Sacramento where he belongs. Now we have a Mayor Lee who no one ever heard of, a mild man who likes shark fin soup. And people want to ban shark fin soup because they're killing sharks. It's horrible what these animals are doing. They're catching sharks, cutting their fins off, and throwing the shark back into the sea. Unbelievable barbarism. Total barbarism.
Savage.
You know, we have with us now a retired U.S. Immigration and Naturalization Service senior agent. His name is Michael Cutler. Now, he's testified more than a dozen times in front of Congress about security and border enforcement, or the lack thereof. He joins us now in the Savage Nation to tell you about how Obama's latest push for amnesty for illegals is absolutely not the solution for our illegal immigration problem. Michael, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Mike. It's a pleasure to join you today. You know, the amazing thing is to listen to the President of the United States and other advocates for open borders and amnesty tell us that the solution to a border that's little more than a speed bump for God knows how many millions of illegal aliens, and among them undoubtedly are criminals and terrorists. We have millions of people in the country. We have no idea as to what their true identities, backgrounds, affiliations, or intentions are. And we're told that the solution is to provide lawful status to these unknown millions of aliens, even though there's no way of verifying their true identities. To me, this is a prescription for suicide as a nation.
In your opinion, what is the single biggest problem with our border security today?
Well, you see, you can't control the border just at the border. I know there's been a big argument about the fence. Should we have one? When will we have one? I know the president says it's been completed. I think someone needs to hand them a copy of the most recent GAO report that came out about 2 months ago that says it will take 10 to 15 more years to build that fence. But a fence in and of itself isn't the solution. I compare a fence on the border to the wing on an airplane. Without the wing, the airplane won't fly, and if it's in the sky and loses a wing, it's going to make a very big hole in the ground. But the wing by itself goes nowhere. The fence is a component of what should be a coherent immigration system. And what that also needs to include is enforcement of the immigration laws from within the interior of the United States. And that doesn't only mean going after criminal aliens, vital as that is. It doesn't only mean going after the employers, who employ illegal aliens intentionally. Certainly they should and they must. But it also means going after this massive problem of fraud in the program by which we give resident alien status and even United States citizenship to aliens. And by the way, not all the illegal aliens run the border. It's estimated that there are anywhere from 5 to 10 million illegal aliens in our country who were admitted into our country through the inspections process and then either overstayed or otherwise violated the terms of their admission. So when you consider those huge numbers of people, now guess how many agents are assigned to look for a population of 5 or 10 million people. We're talking about perhaps 300 agents in the hunt for millions of illegal aliens who have gone missing in America. It's a game of hide and seek. They hide, we don't seek.
Well, whatever happened to that so-called virtual fence they were pushing a few years ago?
you know, if you look at the entire immigration system, there is no system. They talk about a virtual fence. I made a mockery of it because it angers me. I said that a virtual fence would stop virtually no one. You know, the Border Patrol has a catch-and-release program. The alert goes off. They're supposed to respond to the alert. There have never been enough Border Patrol agents, even now with 20,000. When you realize how big both the northern and the southern borders are, and that you have to account for three shifts a day and 7 days a week and days off, and when an agent makes an arrest, he's off the line, and that part of that border is then not protected. So you really can't do it just at the border. But rather than hire more agents, they spent over $1 billion to put up a virtual fence that I predicted would stop virtually nobody. Unfortunately, I was right. So again, it comes back to interior enforcement, you know. I'll tell you what, Mike, if you don't have agents inside the United States backstopping the Border Patrol, if you don't have agents of ICE from inside the United States backstopping the ports of entry, then what you have is basically the same situation as a baseball team trying to win the game but not having their outfielders take to the field. So anybody who can hit the ball over the infielders' heads gets an in-the-park home run. And every day of the week, there are lots of in-the-park home runs being hit by aliens who are able to get past the Border Patrol or get through the inspections process, which is such a fatally flawed process. Just to give you one other example, right now we have to take off our shoes if we plan to get on an airplane because a gentleman by the name of Richard Reed, the shoe bomber, who tried to blow up an airplane by hiding bombs in his shoes, was found out. He tried to set off the bomb. It didn't work, thank God. The plane didn't crash, didn't blow up over the Atlantic. And this was just weeks after 9/11. But what's interesting is that because of Reed, everybody getting on an airplane has to take their shoes off. But Richard Reed, as a British subject, was not required to have a visa in order to get on board that airplane or in order to seek to enter America because Richard Reed, as a British subject, is a citizen of a country that participates in an insane program called the Visa Waiver Program. It now includes 36 countries. Misawi, the so-called 20th hijacker, citizen of France, same deal. He did not need a visa and would not need a visa today. So while we've learned how to scrutinize our own citizens in our own country ever more closely, ever more carefully, in the name of national security, common sense measures, for example, requiring visas of foreign nationals seeking entry into our country is not being done, and it's not being done because the travel and hospitality industry has paid a lot of money to a lot of people, have made campaign contributions, hired Tom Ridge, the first secretary of DHS, and I call DHS the Department of Homeland Surrender for obvious reasons, and they're hawking this idea about Discover America. So that if we can entice more folks to come to America and sleep in those hotel rooms and eat in those fancy restaurants and go to Broadway and ball games, the sun will shine. Well, I love tourism. I think it's great for everybody. But we have to be careful who we let in. But they don't want to be bothered with it. So they have a program they've called Discover America. And I'll tell you what, Mike, as I've often told people, they have forgotten that Al-Qaeda has already discovered America.
Do you think that the government will ever really secure our borders? I don't.
You know, as a federal agent, and you can talk to police officers and other civil servants, I was not allowed to accept a cup of coffee when I was on duty. If I took a cup of coffee from somebody, I was in a world of trouble. Now, look at the politicians who boast about their political campaign contributions. How many politicians? I know Bill Clinton always loved to say, I'm the best fundraiser. What do you think would happen if I went to my boss when I was a senior agent over at the INS, and I spent 30 years with the Immigration Service, I rotated through all the divisions, I was part of the DEA Intelligence Division, I was assigned to the Drug Task Force, and imagine if I went into my bosses or my colleagues and said, guys, you should be proud of me because I'm the best fundraiser in the office. How quickly do you think I would wind up in front of a grand jury? And rightfully so. So when you have a political system where politicians are counting on contributions from people who give them the money with an obvious expectation of a quid pro quo. I give you the contribution. I want access. I want you to vote a certain way for me. Now, maybe they don't go in and say vote for this or vote for that, but everybody understands what's expected when they take the money. Here we have a situation where politicians are taking ever-increasing amounts of money, where just a year ago the Supreme Court ruled that corporations can spend unlimited money to assist in advertising campaigns for political candidates. And meanwhile, we know that corporations make out like bandits, literally and figuratively, when you have open borders, when they can bring in cheap labor, whether it's the illegals at the bottom rung. And by the way, here's a question for you folks out there. How does it become a matter of being anti-Latino or anti-immigrant to say that we want to be careful, that we don't want to let workers into our country that will drive down wages and worsen working conditions? Prior to the Second World War, the immigration laws were the responsibility of the Labor Department out of a concern that if you had a massive influx of foreign workers, it would do exactly what we've been witnessing, drive down wages, worsen working conditions. And lots of the workers, by the way, who are being affected are American citizens who happen to be Latino, happen to be African American, happen to be Asian American and white and every other flavor, because America is certainly not a homogeneous white country. We are the country of the rainbow. So when people are losing their jobs, it's not just the white folks. It's everybody of every ethnicity and religion and race. And the open borders crowd turned this thing into a false deal of, oh, my God, you're a racist, you don't like brown skin, which is a lot of bunk. It's simply about protecting Americans of all ethnicities and all races and all religions. And in my experience as an agent, I have to make a point that when you have transnational criminals and Napolitano, who on the one hand says our borders have never been more secure, but on the other hand says, well, maybe 250 or more cities have been infested by members of the Mexican cartels. Well, if the borders are that secure, how did those cartel members get to America and then spread out throughout our country? How do they continue to get the narcotics, that poison that they sell to people on street corners from coast to coast and border to border, if the borders are so secure? And I spent half my career doing drug investigations. And guess where these criminals set up shop? They set up shop in the communities of people, or among people, that are most like themselves. So if you're talking about the Russian mob, then they live in the Russian-American community. If you're talking about the Mexican cartels, they're living in the communities where the Mexican immigrants are living. If you're talking about Asian organized crime, then they're living in Chinatown. The people that are at greatest risk, folks, are the members of the immigrant community. So how is it that when folks like myself say that, look, we've got to be careful who we let in, we give 1.1 million green cards plus to aliens every year. They are on the pathway to citizenship. That's more than any other country on the planet.
Michael Cutler, thank you very much for being with us on the Savage Nation.
Mike, I want to thank you so much for having me on the program, and I want to especially thank you for covering what is probably the most significant challenge that confronts America today, because it does impact everything that our leaders should be very much concerned about today. And what I'd like you folks to know is that I'm a senior fellow with an organization called CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. They do great work, but it's not just California, it's the whole country. And their website is capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. And I have my own website, and I'd love for you to visit it. Then you can contact me through that website. And my website is michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net.
I'll be right back. Savage. Give you a cultural story. Viagra is huge in Mexico. What's up with that? Mexico is the largest market for erectile dysfunction in the developing world, with about $200 million in sales every year. That's why Pfizer has chosen the country for the introduction of Viagra Jet, a tablet that can be taken without water and will dissolve quickly, making it more convenient to use in the heat of the moment. Pfizer hopes that this innovation will help it keep its foothold in Mexico's lucrative erectile dysfunction drug market a year before their patent on the drug runs out and generics enter the picture. People are not sure why. 2 years after Viagra hit the market in Mexico in 1998 and Pfizer launched, blah, 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 blah. The number of visits to doctors in Mexico where patients mainly complained about erectile dysfunction increased 279%. Erectile dysfunction drugs, as you may know, are a cash cow raking in $5 billion worldwide. 40% of the drugs are sold in the U.S., 13% in Latin America, 3% in Mexico. Viagra is Pfizer's sixth highest selling drug in the U.S. But the demand in Mexico is quite astonishing, and people don't know why. The popularity is astonishing, and they don't exactly know why. However, some are guessing. Machismo culture is changing, said Rubio Aureoles. So apparently that's why it's selling so well in a country that prides itself on machismo. If you can't actually be macho, you can take a drug that makes you so, I guess, right? In America, erectile dysfunction affects 16% of males, surveyed in a worldwide report known as the Multinational Men's Attitude to Life Events and Sexuality Study. That's rubbish. What male is going to tell you the truth about erectile dysfunction? They see those kind of studies. As a trained epidemiologist, that's nonsense. They have no bearing whatsoever. It's like a report that tells you Obama's believed by most Americans. It's like believing the Multinational Men's Attitude to Life Events study is the same as believing Obama's version of what went on in Yugoslavia. So does anyone have an idea why erectile drug would be such a big popular drug in Mexico? It's the machismo, isn't it? I don't think it's a big question. It's a country that prides itself on the macho male. So if you can't really be a macho male, what you do is you take a medicine that makes you into a macho male, and then you can, you know, right? I mean, it's that simple. So that's where they're selling it. I guess eventually here people will just stop using this stuff. It's a terrible drug. The side effects are horrible. Horrible, the blue vision. Right? It gives you like a blue vision, Viagra. Temporal blindness in some cases. But then I jokingly said in 1998 when it came out, people said, you know, that Viagra causes temporary blindness in some cases. And I said, that's part of its desired side effects, so you don't have to look at your partner. Symbol shot. It's part of its appeal. I mean, you're temporarily blinded to your partner, so come on. I mean, who's using it? Older guy. No, I hear a lot of younger guys are using these drugs, too. Go ahead. I like duo. Go ahead.
I'll always want to.
All right. That'll work.
Because my heart is true. Come.
No, I'm too old for this. Turn it off already. I don't feel cheerful about it. I don't know. I don't feel focused today. I just feel very unfocused. I think it's my car. I'm having trouble with my car, and it's bothering me. I think I'm more connected to my car than I like to believe. Can you imagine having a car that's less than 3 years old, an expensive Mercedes? I drive an S600. About a couple of weeks ago, I came back from Florida, and the car, like the hydraulic fluid, it started to smell, and I couldn't turn the wheel. So they took the car, and it turns out that it blew a hydraulic line. All right, this happens in a car. It's three times already the car was brought in, and they allegedly used, steam cleaning. The car still stinks like burning rubber and is bothering me. I will not drive a car that smells of burning rubber. Now, to top it off, it comes back today. I'm about to sign off on it. A gouge in the right fender down to the metal, to bare metal. Can you believe this? Maybe that's what's upsetting me. I don't know. Maybe I'm more connected. Look, a man in the Middle East is connected to his camel. Isn't a man judged by his horse or his camel? Men related to their horses, to their camels, to their cars, to their planes, to their boats. I hate to admit it, that I probably am more connected to, how about the five Statons in the still of the night? Because if this keeps up, even five Statons are not going to save me today. And we'll play in the still of the night. Our little bump and grind. That was a beautiful song in its day. Today, nothing. Kids can't even dance to this. They don't hold while they dance. They do individual dancing. The guy doesn't hold the girl anymore. They put on a show for each other. Two narcissists in the night on ecstasy. No, that's the whole thing. In other words, it's not man and woman coming together at a dance. It's, if you notice it, it's the girl putting on a striptease type of bump and grind, and the guy is standing there trying to imitate the girl as the new dancing. How about another one? I think I'm just going to do music for a little while. You know, one of my favorite ones out there is, why do I like this one? How about Sorry I Ran All the Way Home by the Impalas? I guess I like the idea that it was the Impala, because in 1958, there was a Chevy Impala with 3 2-barrel carburetors that was so beautiful. And there was a rock and roll singer from the neighborhood who became very famous. Today, he's nothing. He's still performing. I can't imagine he has much. But what's his name? Could you play this one? Sorry I Ran All the Way Home, rock and roll. Okay, that's good. I am so glad that I was a late bloomer. What would I have done if I was an early bloomer and hit it big at 16 and was a burnout by 30? This way I struggled my entire life, suffered, walked on hot coals. And by the time you earn, you know, your mild acclaim and your fortune, it's too late, because at the end of the day, you don't even want to spend it. There's nothing you want.
Savage.